Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. Today we have two great artists. They're also artists in their own right, but also I have the NPM chair, former chair, Joanne Warren, and also I have Michael, my man, who is the president. If you have any questions, we invite you to call in at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460, or you can post a question in the chat room. I'm not going to read it on the air. If you do call in, we ask that you turn down your radio and press number one to indicate that you have a question. So we're going to dive right into it. Joanne and Michael, thank you for joining the program.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us, Tim.
I guess we can start with, just tell us about yourselves first. And we start with Joanne and we can go to Michael.
Well, I'm Joanne Werner. I have been involved in the art of pastoral music for more years than I want to admit, about 27. I'm a director of liturgy and music in a large parish in Bedford, Texas, about 4,000 families. And I, as the director of liturgy and music, I'm responsible for everything that happens in worship at the church. And as a person who's been involved in liturgy, I immediately found the National Association of Pastoral Musicians. Way back in 1985, I knew that I needed some help because I didn't know what I needed to know. So I found this wonderful organization, and they taught me much of what I know today. They encouraged my gifts, and eventually I got interested in helping the association in a leadership role. And I have been doing that for about 12 years in various capacities. 4 years ago, I was elected to the board of directors, and I held the position of chair for those 4 years. And that was a wonderful experience to really look at how the association works and how it works so well. I felt very honored and at the same time challenged to be on the board. And it was truly a blessed experience for me. I learned a lot about how nonprofits work and the inner workings of the association. So that's pretty much about me, Tim.
Okay, great. Michael?
Thanks, Tim. I'm Mike McMahon, and as Tim said, I'm the president of the National Association of Pastoral Musicians. We call it NPM. We leave out the A for reasons that are too complex to talk about right now. But anyway, we're NPM, National Association of Pastoral Musicians. I have been here serving as president for the last 10 and a half years, and I succeeded the founder of the organization, a priest named Father Virgil Funk. He founded the organization in 1976. Prior to that, I served, like Joanne, as a parish music director for 25 years in parishes in the states of Delaware and Virginia. And I brought that experience with me to this position and learned there are a lot of challenges to leading an organization like this. And I know we're going to get into those as we go into the program. But I have found it to be really a rewarding and enriching experience. I mean, it's been a real wonderful ride for me. So I'm glad to be with you to talk about it.
Great. I really appreciate it. Tell us about the history of NPM. How did it came about? And you mentioned
it was founded in 1976 by Father Virgil Funk. And when you think about it, the Catholic Church changed a lot in the 1960s. The Second Vatican Council took place in the years 1962 to 1965, and it unleashed a lot of power and a lot of movements within the church for change and transformation. And one of those was in the area of worship. So where at one time music was strictly a performative act where you had a group of people who would sing on behalf of the congregation. Now, after Vatican II, we needed new music and new ways of doing music that fostered the participation of all the people in the parishes. So musicians were looking for some leadership, and so were their pastors. So as a result, Father Funk founded the organization to address that specific need, and found that the need was very great indeed. When the organization had its first convention in 1978, they were expecting a small conference of 300 or 400 people, and instead they ran out of space because they had a response from 700 or 800 people. And he realized this is something that was definitely a need, and the organization has really grown from there.
Wow. Can you talk about, I guess, the way how NPM is structured? I know you're a membership-based organization and you have your conventions. Can you talk about the membership base, how you guys market it to your members, how you recruit them, and also on the other end about the process even with your conventions and how that came about?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the insights that Father Funk had at the beginning of this organization was that if you look at a typical Catholic parish and ask yourself, who are the two people most responsible for the vitality of worship in that parish? The answer would be the priest and the principal musician, because they have the leadership of, you know, the two most important aspects of that celebration. When people go home from church on Sunday, they're usually asking, they're not talking about the ushers or the all kinds of other things. What they're talking about is the music and the homily. And one of the keys to vibrant worship in any parish is to have vibrant music and good preaching. So he structured the organization so that in such a way that the basic membership in the organization is called parish membership, which includes both the pastor and the principal musician. Now, the membership structure has become a lot more complex over the years, but it's still that still is the foundation of our membership, is that parish membership where those two people are involved intimately in thinking about the power of music in the life of a parish.
Wow. It kind of taking a break back, there has been a lot of growth within the last 30 years itself, maybe since the late 70s, within music programs. I don't know about you, but a lot of musicians, I think, in the 70s and 80s were just part-time, and they had several directors to handle just one particular mass. But as we got into the 80s, until really the late 80s and really 90s, churches started to hire full-time directors. Was that because of the your particular organization promoting the cause of excellence within music ministry and worship?
Well, I think NPM certainly has had something to do with it, but I think it's arisen from need. Before the Second Vatican Council, a typical parish could get by with an organist and maybe one choir, because in a typical parish there was only one mass with music on Sunday. And there's music at a lot of masses during the week, but on Sunday it's just one mass. Well, after Vatican II, the expectation was there would be active participation and good leadership at all of the Sunday masses. And again, in your typical Catholic parish, we're seeing more than one mass on Sunday, often 3, 4, 5, and in larger parishes as many as 7, 8, 9, 10 masses on a weekend.
Wow.
And that means you need leadership to make that happen. And so the change in expectation and the growth of Catholic parishes, parishes today are becoming larger all the time. That means the needs are greater and the need for staffing is greater. Now, we happen to have come along around the same time as those needs have arisen, so I think we've helped to foster the movement toward greater professionalization and better education for musicians who are doing this work.
Well, so any, I don't know if one of you or the other might know about, I know we have gone from parishes, maybe 500 families, you knew the parishioner across from you, but mushroom from the last 20 years, since the 90s, from 500 to 700 size parishes into like 10,000 families. Is it, do you know, just off the top of your head, what's causing the boom of these mega churches that we, you know, we're building facilities for 2,000 or 3,000 families? It's just amazing. Anybody know the answer to that or have heard anything?
Well, I think, Tim, that varies from place to place. I think in the Southwest regions, where we had very few priests, it became a necessity to build larger facilities because of the lack of priests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that began very profoundly in the Southwest, but now it is spreading to other parts of the United States, of course. And because we lack, you know, had a lack of priests to cover multiple parishes, we see, you know, often that dioceses are closing parishes and clustering parishes. And so I think the reality is that we will have more and more of the kind of mega church kind of reality in the Catholic Church.
Wow. I guess
I would agree with Joanne. I think I can just put a finger on really the two major causes of this right now, which are demographic shifts from the traditionally Catholic areas in the Midwest and Northeast to the South and Southwest, and also the fewer number of priests. I mean, the number of parishes is decreasing at the same rate as the number of priests in the United States is decreasing, and so we're getting larger parishes with fewer priests.
Wow. How that has played a part of your convention and your growth in the last 20 years? Have you seen an increase from, I think you mentioned that the convention of 800, have you seen the increase in the last 15 years as these parishes get bigger and have bigger staff? Have that filtered through your regional programs and your national conventions?
Well, the conventions, you know, really are at the heart of who we are. If anybody were to ask what is the chief identifier of NPM, I think they would say the National Convention.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, go ahead. So we have that, you know, each year. Hello?
No, I'm here. I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay, so we have a convention each year, and it's grown from that small 700 or 800 convention number to last year we had 3,100 at the convention in Louisville, Kentucky, and it varies from year to year depending on, you know, what are the needs in the parishes. This past year, with the implementation of a new translation of the Mass, musicians were very eager to get information, so we had I think a little higher than average attendance, but you know we're seeing a lot of people who are planning to come to the convention again this year because musicians who serve the Catholic Church really care about what they do and they want to do it better and they want to be connected to other people who do it. So the convention is really, really a very useful piece of our life together.
Wow. So kind of talk about the services that NPM offers. I know you have the conventions. Can you talk about that? I know you have resources and books and things. Can you talk about the products and services NPM offers?
Well, I think one of the wonderful things that we do also beyond conventions, which are so important, are the institutes that we hold all over the United States. You know, the convention is in one locale, but we branch out and try to go throughout the whole United States to provide specific institutes in areas that people can attend. And I think that's an additional wonderful thing that we offer. And along with our wonderful publications, I think our magazine has been, I have to say that in the United States of America, the Pastoral Music Journal is the preeminent publication to address all of the issues around music in the liturgy.
Okay, and that's the monthly magazine?
Monthly magazine, right. And I think, and one of the things that I think we've done brilliantly under Mike's leadership and, of course, the board, but to take advantage of all of the new electronically, you know, the ways to get out to people, I think we've been very tied into taking advantage of all of our new technology very well.
Okay. And
I'll just piggyback on that because, you know, we have a really big website that offers lots of free resources for musicians to that are used really a lot. We've gotten into webinars so that, you know, people who can't get to conventions or institutes have ways of continuing their education. We've produced some recordings, especially of texts that people needed this past year in the implementation of the new mass. So we've been trying to get out there with all kinds of media to help people to you know, learn.
Okay. Regarding the changes in the liturgy, I mean, I know you had a lot of training sessions last summer in Louisville. Anything really planned this year? Are they still in development with the workshops, or anything you guys are going to be offering to help musicians with more music and how to address all the changes?
Yes, actually, there are quite a few sessions at this year's convention that follow up on the changes from last year, although I think it's, you know, about the same urgency because we've gotten over the hump of doing the actual implementation. But, you know, I think people are learning as they're going with the new text. But this year, in 2012, we're also looking back to 1962. As you recall, that was the year that the Second Vatican Council opened. So we're celebrating the 50th anniversary this year. And sort of, you know, looking at the whole question of renewal again, 50 years later, and asking what does that mean today? What does it mean to be renewing the church in our worship and in our parish life?
Okay. I have a question here regarding bilingual music and Spanish music resources. I know you guys have a good relationship and good tie and good influence when it comes to publishers themselves. I guess they're asking, do you know if there are going to be any more sessions during the conference? I guess that's what they're asking. That is going to feature more bilingual and more Spanish music.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, the presence of Spanish-speaking Catholics in the United States is transforming the church in ways that we haven't seen in several generations. So, absolutely, the not only bilingual music, but Spanish music itself, music in Spanish, because we have a very large and growing Spanish-speaking population in the United States, and it's our job to serve the members of the church. So, absolutely, we'll be doing that.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the things that the board has surfaced through our process of developing strategic goals is one of our top strategic objectives is to find ways to serve the Hispanic community. And we've been diligently working on that, and we recognize that as a very important thing to address. And I know that we've done, in the past, we've done a lot of bilingual sessions that address those whole issues, the issues of the Hispanic musicians in the United States. And I think it's still very, very much on our radar and will continue to be.
Okay. Can I talk about the way your organization is structured from the board of directors down to your section chairs? Can you talk about how you structured from the top down?
Well, you know, we've got a myriad of types of musicians, everybody who plays a guitar at Mass to the person who plays the organ to the person who plays, et cetera. So there's a lot of various areas. All of those areas become interest groups, people who are involved in that particular kind of music making. And those people are served by, they have representatives who then feed into what we call the National Council. And the National Council then is the body of people who really surface ideas and who represent their area sections to the board of directors. The National Council also elects the board of directors, and it's a group that really represents the entire membership of the organization. I can only say that the board of directors then really depends on the National Council to give them direction, as well as Mike, who also is very knowledgeable and helps the board really understand the dynamics of what is going on. I don't know. Is that pretty good, Mike?
Absolutely. That's great. You know, one of the things I liked is that you started with the diversity of the membership, which is, you know, really the dynamism of the organization. And one of the things I really like about NPM is that, you know, we managed to bring together a lot of people in church ministry who wouldn't necessarily talk to each other if it weren't for the existence of this organization. And they come together with a common purpose, and that is a really, really cool thing. And the structure that we have sort of serves that diversity and allows it to flourish. It's not that the people don't disagree, and they have their issues with one another, but at least they're all under the same tent and able to come together for that purpose.
Great. So in our organization, you mentioned about the interest groups. Those are like you have ensemble musicians, diocesan directors, Hispanic ministries, pastoral liturgy, music education. You have choir directors, chant, campus ministry, organist, clergy. All of those interest groups, any member of NPM can join, and that is more of a committee, and they have like a chair, and that chair serves on the council, or how does that work?
Yes, that's correct. The chair of each of those sections serves on the council, in addition to some members who are elected at large by the membership, so that the council itself is 40 members who come together to really reflect on where we're going and what we ought to be doing and how we can do better what we do and serve the church better. And those are really wonderful gatherings because the energy that's generated in a room where you put all those different people together with all those different interests and set them to work on a common task, it's just mind-boggling to me to watch that happen.
Wow, all the energy. So,
and Tim, you know, it's wonderful that at the national conventions, the board of directors splits up and they visit all of those interest sections. Hear what is surfaced at those meetings, because that's very important information for the board as well as for those who are preparing for the next convention, those who need to know what people are looking for, what do they need in ministry, what do they need to learn, and so that's an additional piece of that.
Okay. So you have your section chairs. I'm looking at your website. You have at-large members. And how the at-large members are elected? Is that through the entire membership or?
Absolutely.
Yes, those are elected by the entire membership, yes.
Okay. And then you have, like, the national committees. And what are the national committees?
The national committees are responsible for reflecting on various areas of the association's life at large. So, for example, the areas like publications or finance, membership, things like that. And the chairs of those committees are also elected by the membership at large.
Okay. And the last one, the EXO representative, you have like a bishop, you know, Cardinal Donato and some of the others. And how does that serve the kind of that particular section?
Well, one of the ex officio members is the chair of the DMMD. That's the Director of Music Ministries Division. We have one division within the Association of Professional Directors. So the chair of that group automatically serves on the council along with our bishop moderator, you know, who represents the U.S. bishops to the organization and the organization back to the U.S. bishops. And we're so fortunate to have Cardinal DiNardo. He's been really wonderful working with us in this organization. So, you know, those kinds of organizational those people sort of are really important to the organization. And so it's great that they have a voice in the council as well.
Great. We have one question. What I kind of make sense of it real quick. Any particular challenges, I think, as a nonprofit, because you're a really huge organization, any challenges you for other nonprofit organizations that you can kind of give them advice on what steps, you know, not to repeat or what things that they should look out for as they grow? Because you had this particular growth in these last 30 years. Any advice you can tell an organization of the same size or in the same line that you're in for membership, any advice you can give them of things that they should look for as they grow?
Well, I'll start and let Joanne and Steph build on this. But to me, it's really important to be really focused on your mission and be really clear about what it is. And to know your people, know your members, and know what it is that they need. Not what you think they need, but what they think, what they need, you know, what they think they need. Because if you're not addressing them where they are, they're not going to stick around. That's what brings them together. Thinking that they're coming to a gathering or belonging to an organization that really represents them as they are.
I heartily concur with that. And in addition, I think that when things like our recent reset, our financial difficulties come along, you know, the board has to make their choices sometimes that they don't like to make. They need to be realistic. And I think that that was, you know, NPM, along with a lot of nonprofits, went through a real scary time with this last recession. And I think that we need to be able to make tough decisions even though they affect people. You know, they affect mainly our staff at our national office. And our staff is a wonderful staff, and they have just done remarkable work in getting us through this transition. And so I commend them.
Okay.
We have a wonderful staff. We have a wonderful staff.
Great. We have a question of one of the people in the chat. They said, well, how can a person be a speaker on the NPM format? Do they contact NPM or contact or section? Or how is that? How do you pick your speakers for your conference?
You know, we do this a little differently from a lot of other organizations. Some organizations sort of take proposals for sessions at their conferences. We do it a little differently, and it sort of reflects what I was saying before in my advice about knowing your members and knowing what they need. We have a planning process that involves the local people where the convention will be held, and leaders of the organization from several hundred miles around that area. We invite these people to come for a meeting. It usually draws 40 to 50 to as many as 100 people, kind of to come together to reflect on what should this convention be about and who are the people that we would like to see addressing it. And so we sort of take it not from who wants to present, but rather from who do people want to hear presenting, and try to take it from mostly from that point of view. And it's been a pretty successful formula for us up till now. Now, I didn't really answer your question, though, about if somebody really wants to. We have a director of continuing education on our staff, and they would contact him and let him know what their qualifications are, what they're interested in. And, you know, he would also explain to them the process that really involves not the proposal, but the people who are making the plans.
Okay. And within this planning committee, that planning committee, for example, once a city is chosen.
Hello?
Are you still there, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And once a city is chosen, how does that process work? How do you choose a city? And you mentioned about the local community starts the process and how the sections play a part of in making that process planning. Can you talk about that, if you don't mind?
About the choosing a city?
Choosing a city, and then you talked about that planning committee and their responsibility, and then how the other sections play a part of that in order to plan the conference.
Right. Again, the conference planning, it's really, we try as much as possible to have it be a bottom-up process.
Okay.
So in terms of getting a sense of what's needed, we ask the section chairs to send in their proposals for what ought to be done at the convention so that there are sessions that address the interests of the actual members.
Wow.
And that's one of the main reasons for having sections is so that you get a sense of what the people who are doing this work want and need. And that's also been really, really helpful. Choice of city, again, we do a little differently from other organizations as well, which is sometimes driven by a formula. You know, well, we were in the East last year, we're going to go to the West this year. We have chosen to go with a formula that says we're going to go where we think the most people are going to come. And that has resulted in not getting out into other parts of the country that might be nice to do. But we've tended to go with safe locations in terms of drawing the numbers of people and looking at our membership patterns and travel patterns as a way of guiding the city choice. And I think that's really been helpful to us in staying afloat and continuing to exist. I've watched a lot of other organizations go to cities where they've done poorly and their organizations are really suffering as a result. They got out into those areas, but the organization as a whole has suffered.
Okay. Any plans of coming to back to Dallas anytime soon?
Well, we don't have any immediate plans. We're going in 12, we're going to Pittsburgh, and 13 to Washington, D.C., and in 14 we're going to St. Louis, Missouri. So we don't really have any plans beyond that, but we're certainly open and looking.
Okay. So this year you'd be in Pittsburgh, and next year at D.C., and you said St. Louis for 2014.
That's right.
Okay, great. Well, that's close.
It is.
It's good for you and I.
Exactly.
Joanne. Okay, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Just to close with, we have one last question, which is humorous. I think we've been asking this question for years, why Catholics don't sing. Anybody want to comment on that one?
Oh, our Catholics do sing. At least in my parish and yours, Tim, right?
They're getting there.
We're getting there. You know, why Catholics don't sing, I don't know that that's a real valid assessment. At least among the people that I think I associate with here in this area, I think our Catholics are doing a great job in singing.
Okay.
Great. I agree. I think we're seeing a lot of that. Anybody that walked into a Catholic church 50 years ago and walks into one today, the difference is unbelievable.
Wow.
And we're especially singing, I think, with our new, with the implementation of the new Roman Missal and with new Mass settings, I think people are really making a serious effort at singing and really praying the liturgy. And I think for that reason, you know, the new Roman Missal has been a blessing. People are engaged in learning new things. So it's a blessing to the church.
Okay.
And I would also say that NPM has had a lot to do with it, too. I think NPM has been a real positive force in helping American Catholics to sing.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You just say, the other question, part of this question, you say, well, how can I get my congregation to sing? So anybody have any advice?
Well, that's another 30 minutes.
Just just a comment or something like that.
I think good leadership, good music, good leadership and good music, and listening to them sing when they sing. I think we need to start listening to what's really there, you know. Just listening to the people sing and encouraging them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think it's equal doses, good musical leadership and good parish leadership. People sing in parishes where there's a vibrant parish life, not just where there's a good music director. And pastoral leadership is key, I think, to that as well.
Amen.
Anything, I guess, to both of you to leave us with, I guess a comment from either one of you or both of you, if you don't mind, regarding NPM, regarding music ministry itself? In closing.
I would say that the people of NPM are, you know, they are passionate about their vocation as musicians in the Catholic Church, and they don't work for big bucks, and they continue to serve the church. They are true stewards of God's grace and God's music, and I value every single one of those associates and pray that our organization continues to serve them.
Okay.
Well, I think that's a great way to end. You know, that we one of the great things about NPM is we've got great people who care about each other and care about what they do, and that's one of the things that makes it a successful association, I think.
Right. Guys, I really appreciate you coming onto the program and answering all those questions and talk about your organization. Again, how can they contact NPM? You have the website address and phone number and about the conferences again?
Yeah, the easiest way to get information is on the website, which is www.npm.org. That's Nancy Paul Mary, www.npm.org. Our phone number here is 240-247-3000.
Great. And again, the conference this year is going to be in Pittsburgh,
July 23 to 27. Come to the Three Rivers and have a great time with us.
Okay. And next year is DC, and the following year is St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you guys for coming onto the program. I really appreciate all your energy and all your information. The audience really appreciate it. But thank you for joining the program.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. Thank you, John and Michael. John Warner, former chair of the board of directors for NPM, and J. Michael McMahon, president at NPM. Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day. Take care. This has been another production of the Core Business Show, sponsored by the Apple Capital Group. You can download this episode on iTunes or get on Blog Talk Radio Network / Apple Capital Group. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.